Hi, everybody. Welcome to Cloud Cover. Today, I've got a special guest, which you may have seen before, Stephen Ciciliano.
Hi.
And today, can you tell us a little bit about what you'll be talking about after we go through the news?
Sure. So a little while ago, we released a new version of the Management API SDK. So I'm going to show off how you can use the SDK that we have for monitoring features, including alerting and autoscale, to be able to more effectively manage your services.
Awesome. Looking forward to it. So, as I said, first we'll go through a little bit of news. Now, depending on when you watch this, this may be a little bit old for you, but if you haven't seen it, it's definitely really cool and awesome stuff. So, just some recent Windows Azure announcements are a couple really big asks. So, the first is staging support for Windows Azure website. So, previously, you just had a production site, and if you wanted to have, you know, a beta sort of site, it was really up to you to kind of figure out how to handle that. You know, there were certainly easy ways to do it, but it certainly wasn't turnkey out of the box. Well, now with staging publishing support, you can easily set up a staging site and, you know, push to that, test out your configuration, make sure everything's working, and then once you're happy, just swap those so you're not risking any downtime or any, you know, these files are updated but these aren't yet. It just does it for you. So really awesome stuff. So we'll continue on here. It's quite a bit here about staging, so I suggest you definitely read some more. Also with that, there's also support for always on for websites, so no worrying about stuff being cold or, you know, not having been hit recently. Also the whole swapping thing, you know, always on, not going to have those issues, which is great. So we've got some monitoring improvements for websites and SQL database alerts, so more information about how your stuff's performing and, you know, letting you know if there are any issues.
Yeah, one of the really cool things about this one is we now have metrics every minute for websites.
That's pretty impressive, so, you know, very, very down, you know, down to the minute, you know, what's going on. Very
exactly.
Cool. So Hyper-V Recovery Manager is now in GA, so you can use that with Abandon. Mobile services support for Sentia Touch. We actually did an episode on this with a guy from Sentia a little while back, so if you are looking to do stuff with Sentia, we've now got, you know, really easy to use support for mobile services in that. And now it's crazy to think this one's actually the bottom of the list here, because I think a lot of people would say this is, you know, just huge, huge news. But PCI DSS compliance for Windows Azure, you know, huge ask. People have been asking for a long time. So this being out there is just phenomenal stuff. And that's what we got for the news today. We'll make sure we post a link to that at the bottom of the page under the video. So we're going to go ahead and switch over and get ready for our main presentation.
And now, our feature presentation.
All right, and we're back. Let's do this.
So the new management SDK is available via NuGet. So I have a project here that I've already set up, but I'll kind of walk you through the process of how to get it. If you go to Tools, Library Package Manager, and then you can open up Manage NuGet Package for Solution. That'll give you a list of all of the NuGet packages. So you actually want to include the pre-release packages here. So as a reminder, this is a preview SDK, so we reserve the right to change things later. But it does fully function now, but that doesn't mean that it'll be completely forward compatible. So if you just search for monitoring here, it should come up, and you can see it right here, the Windows Azure Monitoring Services Management Library. Nice, concise name.
It's very, very, you know, easy to say. Rolls off the tongue.
Exactly. Microsoft is well known for that. So you can see here the latest version was published just a few days ago. So if I didn't already have it installed, you could just click the install button, but it's already here. So once you click install, it'll ask you to agree to some terms and install the prerequisites. But once you click install, then it includes everything that you need, all the dependencies. So then what you need to do is you need to start using it. So thanks to Visual Studio, if you just start typing these guys out, you can right-click, go to resolve, and then it'll bring in the dependencies.
Yep.
So that's pretty easy. The management SDK is built on the concept of clients. So we have actually three different clients that we use. There's a client for metrics, there's a client for alerts, and a client for autoscale.
Now, when you install NuGet, all that code's there, though, right?
Yep. It all comes in, but you will have to instantiate each of these clients individually.
Mm-hmm.
So that way you're not bringing in everything at once.
Makes sense.
If you don't want to. So the first client I'll talk about is a metrics client. So in order to create any of these clients, the pattern is exactly the same. You create a certificate cloud credentials object, You pass in the sub ID and the cert that you have. So I'm not going to walk through how to get the management cert uploaded, but there's lots of instructions online about how to get that taken care of.
Okay, and we'll make sure we include a link to that because it's, you know, not exactly a one-step process.
No, it's not. But once you do that, then there's a helper function that we have here that's get store certificate, which is actually all the way at the bottom. This is copy and pasted code that you're going to find in a lot of samples for Windows Azure. But basically, it just looks at your local store and takes the thumbprint that you provide it and then pulls it out so that way you can use it.
So they can copy and paste the same code.
Yep, exactly.
Great.
So then once you have your credentials and your sub ID, you can create a new metrics client. So this metrics client is basically the object that handles all the operations that you're going to be performing for getting metrics. So the next concept that we have is the concept of a resource ID. So the resource ID is kind of the unique identifier for each resource in Azure. So you'll have a resource ID that represents a website, or a resource ID that represents a cloud service, or virtual machines, or whatever. We've created these nice helper functions for you, so that way you can, let's just do an example here. It's a resource ID builder helper, and you can see here that there's all the different resources that we support today, cloud services, HD Insight, mobile services. Each have their own helper function to be able to build the resource ID for that thing.
Okay.
So in the example I have here, I'm building a website resource ID, so I'm going to get some metrics about that website. Whenever you build the resource ID, you know, it'll just tell you what the parameters are. So here, let's see, how do I get it to autocomplete? There we go. So you can see for a website, it takes a web space name and a website name.
Now, what is the web space name?
So web space is a concept that kind of groups all of the websites you have in a region into a single entity. If you've used the Antares API before, kind of it's the root of the API. So there's a function that's like list web spaces, and it will tell you all the web spaces you have. And you'll see in this example right here, the web space names are all actually just the name of the region followed by the word web space.
Okay.
However, I do recommend, you know, if that doesn't work for some reason, you can call the Antares API to get all the web spaces. And that will also tell you the names of the websites in the web space. So you can do a correlation there.
So it's pretty easy to figure out what you might want to put there.
Yeah, but generally, you can just do North Central US web space or whatever you want.
Okay.
So once you've built the website ID, then you can actually start calling the API. So we have a couple methods on the metrics client. So here you can see you can get metric definitions, you can get metric values, and metric settings. So what metric definitions are is it's a list of all of the metrics available for that website. So this will return back and say, hey, you have requests, errors, CPU, all of that stuff. Doing this step is useful because it actually gives you the actual names that we use in the back end. So when we get to alerting and autoscale, we're going to use the metric name that we get from this API call as a parameter when you do the alert or you do the autoscale.
Okay.
And then the parameters for this are just the resource ID. I don't remember what these optional parameters are, but I'm sure the documentation has that. Then basically what this performing this action on this client actually does a synchronous call. So it just returns back a response. The response will have the response code. It'll be 200 if it worked. It may be a 404 if the resource doesn't exist, 500 if we've done something horribly wrong. So there's a few responses there. And to actually get the value back, you just do dot metric definition collection.
Okay.
So this returns an object. And you can see here that I iterate over the object right here. So for each of the metric definitions, I'm going to write out the value that we have in the API.
And this is nice because if we add in on the Azure side, if we add new metric definitions, you don't have to do anything in your code to necessarily pull those down. It's just going to show up right here.
Exactly, yep. So generally, people should avoid trying to hard code a set of metrics. You know, if they're going to build their own portal, well, not their home portal, but their own dashboard that contains graphs and charts. Maybe you want to put it up on a monitor in a hallway. You can do that now with this SDK because you can just list all the metrics, and then once you have the metrics, you can actually get their values and build your own charts if you want.
Great.
So there's lots of cool stuff that you'll be able to do with this now. And yeah, because it's all available via VBA API. So I will run this, and hopefully my network still is working, and I'll be able to show this go. That was right. So here you can see in the console window, there's a list of metrics here. So you can see here, for example, HTTP 404, 403s, we have data in, requests, CPU time. All of these metrics are available here for you to see. Now, there's a couple other interesting properties for a metric. We also have namespaces. Namespaces are useful if we have different groups of metrics. So you can see here at the top, we have all of the metrics for the website, so CPU time, requests. But also, if you set up web tests that ping your website regularly, those are another namespace. So you can see here it's Windows Azure.availability. And that is just another group of metrics together that we've kind of correlated. So you can see here that I've actually set up a couple web tests, some from Virginia, some from Texas. So that way I get a couple geos pinging that website.
Absolutely.
And then they return back what the uptime and response time is for my website. So that's also useful, as we'll see, for alerting. So that way I can set up an alert based on this and understand the uptime and response to my website. One other thing to note here is the display name is different from the metric name. So metric name kind of has this ugly GUID. You're not going to ever see that in the portal. But when you call via API, you are going to need to use the actual metric name, not the display name.
So it's just like a unique ID identifying that specific metric.
Exactly.
Perfect.
One last thing here. There's a property on metrics called isAlertable. So here you can see that for response time, I can alert on these metrics. And then some other metrics, maybe like data out, I actually can't alert on that.
Okay.
And generally that has to do with, you know, is the time grain fine enough to be able to reasonably do an alert? So if you only get a metric once an hour, generally you're not going to want to alert on that because, you know, it's not very useful.
Sure. And then that minimum alertable time window?
So if the metric is alertable, this is kind of the smallest granularity that you have that we recommend doing an alert over.
Okay. So in the case of these last few, the geo test you set up, it's basically every 15 minutes is the minimum you're going to get.
Yep, exactly. Gotcha. Cool. So that's listing all the metrics that you have. Then I'm not going to drill into this too much, but you can also get a list of the actual values of the metric. So that's pretty simple. So it's the same pattern as before, where you do metrics client dot, except instead of metric definitions, we're now going to do metric values. And then the function you're going to call is list, because you want a list of the metric values. You pass in that same resource ID that we had before. Now you're going to pass in what metrics you're interested in. So this could be CPU time, you know, whatever you want.
So if I was building a dashboard, I'd probably call the metric definition, you know, maybe once, and then I'd use that to repeatedly call and get the actual values out.
Exactly. And as you can see here, this actually takes a list of metric names. So you could even pass this list that you got from up above. You'd have to do a little transform on it to get just the list of the names, but pass it as a parameter to this function, and then it gives you a batch of all of the metrics that you pass in.
Sounds pretty easy.
The next parameter is namespace. So that is interesting. You can only get the metrics in a single namespace at once.
Okay.
So if you wanted both the response time and the CPU time metrics, there would have to be two separate calls.
Understood.
Then you have the time granularity. So this is basically in our database, we may store metrics once a minute, and we also may store metrics once an hour. So the once a minute metrics are a new feature that we just saw, actually. And then for availability, for example, we get metrics every 5 minutes because every 5 minutes you do a ping against that website.
Right.
So other metrics, you know, every once an hour. So you can choose kind of that granularity. It depends if you want your dashboard to be like over an entire day, you probably want a data point every hour.
Okay.
If you want it to be just like what's happening the last 30 minutes, then you could do it once a minute. And then finally, you just pass in the time range over which you're interested in the metric. So in this case, now minus 6 hours, so I'll get 6 data points with this call.
Okay.
And then all you have to do is do a metric. So this is the actual call to the server. So this is the blocking call, and then this will return back the set of values.
Now, how far back in time can people make metrics calls for?
So in the portal, generally we expose 7 days. You may find that some data actually goes back further, but we only kind of guarantee that you have 7 days of data.
Sure. But if you're building a real-time dashboard, you're probably really just interested in what's happening, you know, currently.
Yep. The other thing here is it takes a lot of time to get metrics. So if you tried to do 7 days at minute granularity, that call won't work.
Right.
Because it'll time out getting all that.
Sounds like it'd be a lot of metrics and, you know, too,
yes,
as well.
Yes, so. Exactly. So do be careful. You may be sitting here waiting a lot of time as this times out if you try to get too much data at once.
Okay.
I'll put another breakpoint in, and we can see. I didn't write fancy console.write lines for this one, but we can just look at the actual object in the debugger.
That'll work.
It seems to have skipped over that. I may have ignored my breakpoint. I don't know why. Oh, one or more metric name is invalid.
Okay.
So you can see here that I changed it to CPU time. This may actually be case sensitive, so I'll just change it back to requests. But you can see here we do actually check that you pass in.
And as you said earlier, that's why you don't want to hard code things, because you know, if you hard code it wrong or if it changes, that's going to be an issue.
Exactly. So I'm demonstrating my own value. So here we go. So actually, I guess it doesn't look like we have any. I need to step over this guy. So in the values, you can see we have, there's one value because I got one metric.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can see here this is the actual data you're going back. So you get the start time, the end time, the time grain. It does look like I have chosen a metric that doesn't seem to have any data right now. But you can imagine inside this array, you're going to get all the data points.
Metrics, sure.
Yeah.
Great.
So that's metrics. So the next interesting thing is alerting.
Mm-hmm.
So for alerting, we have kind of a similar pattern that we had before. So you create a new alerts client that encapsulates all the functionality that you can do on alerts. So there's a few different things you can do with alerts. You can list the alerts that you have. So that's kind of the most interesting thing. Now, alerts, there's a couple different terminologies that I'll talk about real quick.
Sure.
So there are alert rules, which is a condition that you set up that's like CPU time is greater than 50%.
Mm-hmm.
There's also an alert incident, which is a historical thing that has happened, such as saying yesterday at 2 p.m. CPU time was above 50%.
So basically, you know, you've got your list of rules of what you might want to have criteria and alerts off of, and then you've got a history of when these alerts were hit.
Exactly. So you'll see here, if I do alerts client, I have two different things. I can get a list of incidents or a list of rules.
Okay.
Incidents will give me historical data. Rules will give me right now what do I have configured that's interesting. So here, to list the rules, I just do rules.list. And then in this example, I have some more console.writeline code that will just go through and list all of those alerts. So why don't I, we can run this and see what happens. Press any key to continue. Oh yeah, so you can see here, these are the alerts that I have in my subscription
mm-hmm.
right now. So I have a few alerts. We have the name of the alert here. So the name is defined by you. So like web role with high CPU is the name of this alert. Enabled or disabled. So you can disable an alert if you're not interested in it right now. And then this is the actual condition for the alert. So in this case, greater than 50%
of the CPU.
Yep. Or you could do a variety of conditions, which I'll talk to in a moment. One other thing I didn't mention earlier is for each metric definition, there's actually a unit associated with that metric, which I guess I didn't do a console.write line, but when you look at metric definitions, you'll be able to see it. If you have, be careful about the units. So if, for example, you create an alert on data out,
mm-hmm.
if the units are bytes per second, and you say, oh, I want the threshold to be 50, that's 50 bytes per second, not like 50 megabytes per second,
right,
or gigabytes,
so
or whatever.
So you can easily set up an alert that might just alert you all the time because you're usually blowing past here, for example, 50 bytes a second.
Exactly. And we do manipulations so that way in the portal it looks like it's the right scale. So even if the portal it says it's megabytes, in the API it may actually be bytes.
Okay, so what you see in the portal might be more appropriate, but when you're actually doing this you need to make sure you're looking at the right unit.
Exactly. So that's just something to keep in mind. But yeah, so this is listing the alerts. So it's pretty straightforward. An alert has a few different things inside of it. So now let's try to create an alert via API.
Great.
So what we have here is a, did I scroll too far or not far enough? Too far. We have a new rule.
Mm-hmm.
So the rule is just kind of the entity that you create. So you can create a name. So let's call this my response time rule. Response time rule. Each rule has an ID, so just use new good here.
Mm-hmm.
So that way, you know, it can be unique. And then you can create a description. So my response time is 500. Inside the alert, you already saw the isEnabled field that we printed out.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a condition and an action. So the condition is basically, when should this alert be triggered?
Mm-hmm.
So the properties for that are an operator, which can either be greater than, less than, or a few other conditionals. I think we also have greater than or equal or less than or equal.
Okay.
We have the threshold, which is the actual value that you're going to cross. So in this case, if I want my response time is greater than 500, I set it as 500. We have the window size. So this is the time window over which we're evaluating that alert.
Mm-hmm.
So you saw before, for each metric, we actually tell you what the minimum window size is. So in this case, 15 minutes. And finally, we have the data source. So this is where, again, you shouldn't probably hard code this, but you can if you want. So this is the name of the metric from the previous API call that we had.
Mm-hmm.
That same resource ID. So you just use that same resource ID builder if you want. And then the namespace of the metric. For metrics that are kind of native to a resource, this will just be empty string. For availability, which is kind of the web test pinging, it's Windows Azure.availability.
Okay.
So right now, those are actually the only two valid values you'll ever see in namespace, because we don't have other features that kind of come in and get that data. And then you have your rule action. So the rule action encapsulates what is the stuff you can do with this rule. So you can choose, for example, to send to service owners, which emails all of the service and co-admins of your subscription.
Okay.
Or you could also, if you wanted, send to a custom email address. If you set up like a PagerDuty gateway, for example, you could get a notification to PagerDuty every time that something happened. Or an SMS gateway, you could also do that as well.
Okay, makes sense.
And then you add the action, and then you actually perform the request. So just like with metrics, you do metrics client dot something. Here you do alerts client dot rules dot create or update.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to do a little manipulation here. So you can't actually pass in the rule. You have to wrap it inside a parameters object.
Okay.
So you can kind of imagine that if you think about you're actually making the REST call, it would be rule colon and then the body of the rule.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't actually just pass in the body. You have to kind of give it a key and a value. So that's what you're seeing here is just rule equals and then
the rule we just created.
The body of the rule. Yep. And yeah, so that this is a synchronous call, and then here it just tells you what the status code is. So let's run this. Well, actually, first I'll go to the portal and show that I don't have that alert. And I guess I already ran this before, so I will have it, but I'll change the name. So you can see here, this is my list of alerts, and I'll change this to Cloud Cover Cool Alert or something.
That's what it should be.
Yep. Cloud Cover Cool Alert. And I run this, and theoretically, if my code is good, this will successfully create on the server. So according to my code, it's created.
All right.
Doesn't mean it actually was. So I'm going to I'll reload the portal, and hopefully we'll see my alert was created, and it will start. Generally, it takes a few minutes to start actually running, so it needs to get provisioned in all of our backends and stuff. But you know, within 15 minutes or so, I'll start getting emails if my response time is bad or you know whatever condition I want. But you can see here, cloud cover cool alert. So this is the alert I just created. So here's an example of where you should pay attention to units. So the response time alert is actually now 500 seconds.
Okay, which is a little more, you know, not really going to be very helpful.
Right. So what I was really meaning to do was milliseconds. Mm-hmm. So I need to actually do 0.5 okay. if I want 500 milliseconds.
That makes a little bit more sense.
Yep. So you can see here.
Great. But if I'm doing a lot of websites, I want to set up rules for all of them. This is going to be a really easy way for me to just automate, or not really necessarily automate, but almost script it out so that you know, I don't have to manually come into the portal every single time, add new alerts when.
Yep, that's exactly right. Perfect. And then just like you can create an alert, you can also get the alert and you can get the status of the alert history. So that way you can see when this thing has fired. Obviously this won't have fired, but if I wonder if I have any other alerts right now that have fired. But
that would be a very slow website if it had fired.
Yeah, so it looks like I don't have any alerts right now that have actually gone off. But yeah, you can use this for your own alerting system if you want to track stuff internally. You want to, you know, let people know if something's going wrong. You can get all of that history via this SDK, and you can create your own management tools on top of it.
Awesome.
So the other thing I'm going to cover is Autoscale. So for Autoscale, again, we have the same client. And actually, I'm going to comment out this stuff so I don't try to create an alert every time we run this.
But since you're doing create or update, it would realistically look at that. Well, it would. This is a new GUID.
Yep.
If you're creating a new GUID, it would actually would create a new rule each time, even though the name's the same.
That is correct.
Okay.
The name isn't required to be unique. However, because alerting is a preview feature, we do have a cap of 10 alerts per subscription. So if I ran this a few more times, I may actually run out of my quota, and then I'd have to start deleting them, and this would throw an error. And
it would just ruin everything.
Yes, exactly. let's go on to Autoscale. Autoscale is also a preview feature. You also can only create 10 Autoscale rules.
Okay.
But that is the wrong thing I wanted to do. So you can see here, I have the Autoscale client, new Autoscale client. Just like before, I perform operations on this client. The kind of the thing for Autoscale is a setting. So whenever you do operations on Autoscale, you're actually just changing the configuration of Autoscale. Mm-hmm. You're not actually going to go in here and scale a website.
Right.
If you want to do that, you can use the Antares APIs or their SDK to go scale the website at that point in time. But if you want to update, read your Autoscale configuration, you can do that via the Autoscale client.settings. Now there's one interesting complexity here. The resource ID for Autoscale is actually different from the resource ID for metrics and alerts.
Okay.
So you first have to be careful to use the Autoscale resource ID builder, not just the resource ID builder.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason for that is that the types of objects that you perform Autoscale on are slightly different. So for websites, you have all of the websites in a region actually scale together as a unit.
Right.
You don't, you know, scale one website up and one website down, and you know. So because of that, you don't actually perform scale on just an individual website.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see here, that's why we have these two parameters. So it's the web space, and what, if you look in the API, is called server farm. We generally, you know, we don't talk about server farms,
right?
Because they're not really an interesting thing, but that's just a parameter that you have to pass.
So with that, that's pretty much the default value for generally anyone, right?
So what this will do is this will be the same everywhere. This part, I just scrolled over. This part will be.
Mm-hmm.
This is the web space that we discussed earlier.
Right.
Yep.
Okay.
So here I can run this and see if I have Autoscale enabled for this. Actually, why don't I move this down a little bit so that way I can take a look at the Autoscale setting in the console. And what I probably should do is comment out the other stuff since we don't need to see all the metric definitions. But okay, so now we have the Autoscale setting, and if I open this guy up, I'll be able to see. So inside an autoscale setting, you have two fields. One is whether or not it's enabled, mm-hmm. and the other is a set of profiles. What a profile represents is it represents how you want to scale in a given time window. So for example, you could say, at night, I want to scale one way. In the day, I want to scale another way. Mm-hmm. Most people actually will just have one profile, because you kind of set up and you say, I want to auto-scale between 70 and 40% CPU.
Right.
And that just applies no matter
what time of day it is.
Exactly. You know, maybe you don't have multiple profiles, but we still allow you to if you want. Okay. So that's the other field that you saw there. And then inside the profiles, we have a few different concepts which I'll walk through as we build it. But so we can actually take a look now. So anyways, you can see here, I did indeed get the actual autoscale setting for the website. Mm-hmm. So now we'll build a new one. Now, what's interesting about autoscale is there's a lot of stuff you can do via SDK that you actually can't do in the UI.
Okay.
So the UI, we kind of tried to make it as simple and straightforward as possible for people to come in and enable it. And as a refresher, I can just go to the UI real quick and show you what that looks like. But in the UI, right now for websites, for example, you can only scale by CPU. For other resources, we have scaling by queue depth or CPU. Mm-hmm. But still, it's again those only two metrics that you've provided, or that we've provided to you. If you want to scale by any other metric, we don't have a mechanism to do it in the UI today.
Right.
But if you are, you know, a power user and you have your service emitting custom metrics that you want to scale by, if there's some other load characteristic that's very interesting for your site, you can scale by those as well now with the SDK. So you can see here, I just have CPU, but what you'll be able to do is scale by any other metric that you want. So I'm going to build our new autoscale setting here. I don't need this window. So we have enabled. We want to enable it.
Of course.
And then we have a list of profiles. So I could actually have multiple profiles here if I wanted, mm-hmm. One for night, one for day. Another thing is today we only support a few different very fixed concepts of time. So we support a day profile and a night profile, or a week and a weekend profile, mm-hmm. or a combination thereof. So you can do like day, weekday, weeknight, weekend.
Gotcha.
And you can configure that by doing these checkboxes. We let you choose when the day starts, when the day ends, what the time zone is. So this works really well if you conform to this pattern. Mm-hmm. But if you say, if you're a Monday through Thursday company and you only work Monday through Thursday, then you know, you can't set that up here.
Right.
If you have a peak during the morning and a peak during the evening, you can't set that up. Mm-hmm. So there's some flexibility that you lose by going through the UI here that you will now be able to do via the SDK. That's what you have here. So the recurrence is really the thing that allows you to set up those different schedules. Mm-hmm. So for frequency, we require that the frequency be 1 week. So every schedule that you set up is going to be a weekly schedule, because
right.
every week is going to be the same, theoretically. And then inside the schedule, now you can put exactly what you want. So you're going to have days, and you can have a list of, say, if I only want my schedule to run on Thursday, I can do that,
mm-hmm.
right? And then what you also can do is, is that valid syntax? What is it telling me? Well, anyway. So you put your list of days in here. You also can put your list of hours.
Mm-hmm.
So your hours would be if you have, it's basically you define the time that your schedule starts. So if I want my new scale settings to apply at 8 a.m., I would put 8. If I want my schedule to start at noon, I would put 12, 24-hour clock, obviously.
Right.
But you stick all of that in. And then once you do that, if you have another profile, you're going to want to kind of take this, copy and paste it down,
mm-hmm.
and then say, you know, this one I want to start at, say, 8 p.m. So I'd put, like, you know, I'd put 20 here.
Mm-hmm.
So this will get very complicated, so I'm not going to do that right now. But you can imagine that you can set up any number, I think up to 10 different profiles. So that way you can have basically 10 different time windows
mm-hmm.
that all have different scale settings.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, how do these alerts you can create that aren't or these autoscale rules you set up that aren't what you can do in the portal? What does it look like in the portal once you create that?
Yeah, so we'll kind of make a best guess about what you've configured, but it is actually possible that once you set up these schedules, this dialog won't exactly work as behaved or as expected.
Mm-hmm.
However, you can still edit each of those profiles individually. So this drop down here is going to list, right now there's only one item in it, but it's going to list all the profiles that you have. So you can still come in here, you can still adjust your instance count and your target CPU range for that profile, even if you can't come in here and kind of tweak the exact times, you know, or days of the week that your schedule will run
on. So if you do have some an autoscale setup that is kind of fancy like that and you want to make sure you know where you're trying to edit it at, whether you're going to do it manually through the code or back here in the portal.
Yep, exactly, yeah. I don't recommend trying to edit it from both places at the same time.
Sure.
So if you are going to set up kind of those profiles that you really want, you probably shouldn't come in here and start checking these boxes and changing stuff around because it may not do exactly what you'd expect.
That makes sense.
So that's profile. So that's the kind of the top-level concept. Inside a profile, then, you have the default capacity, the minimum capacity, and the maximum capacity. So that's kind of what this slider maps to right here.
Mm-hmm.
So min is obviously the lowest that will never scale you below. Max is the highest that will never scale you above. Default is where we'll scale you if something goes wrong. So generally, default in the portal is going to be set to what it was before you turned on autoscale.
Okay.
If you're thinking about this on your end, think about if, say, machines stop reporting metrics back.
Mm-hmm.
Say something goes wrong with the system. We'll scale you to the default. So that's kind of the safe place to go.
Okay.
So that's something that you can set via API. You can't set that in the UI as well.
Gotcha.
So no matter what you put this, you'll never see it. And then inside the profile, we have a list of rules. So the rules are kind of the interesting meat of the autoscale. So here, I've got my rule, and inside this, let's see, list rules, and I think it may actually be a different, it's actually a scale rule.
Okay.
Because the rule for autoscale is slightly different from the rule for alerts. Because it takes slightly different parameters, does slightly different stuff, so be sure to use that object type or else it will not work. And here you can just do new scale rule, and then we can see all the cool stuff that we have in here. So there are two things, just like for alerts, you have kind of the condition that triggers it and the thing you do with that condition.
Right.
Here, so we have metric trigger, and the metric trigger is the only type of trigger that we support right now. Inside the metric trigger, you're going to see this whole list of properties. So these properties look very familiar because they're the same types of properties that we take for alerts. But for example, you have your name of the metric. Now, this is where, as I was mentioning a little earlier, if you have custom metrics, you can start using those. So custom metrics or even standard metrics that we just don't expose to the portal.
Sure.
If I wanted to scale up whenever my data out exceeded a certain threshold, I could do that here. So I could just say data out and start scaling by that. We also have metric namespace, which I kind of covered before.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be empty for most scenarios. Metric source. So now you may wonder, well, why do I need to define the data source? Because I'm already on a website, right?
Right.
Well, for this scenario, actually, you don't need to define the, well, you still need to define it, but you really shouldn't necessarily need to do it. But if I have, say, a queue that I'm alerting on that's off in a storage account that's not associated with this website, I still need to be able to identify, hey, that's the queue that I want to alert on.
Right.
So that's why we asked you to define the source of the metric explicitly.
Mm-hmm.
So I can do autoscale metric source builder. So this is another builder that's a little different from the builder that I used up here. because it's, you know, again, a different scenario. But, you know, I just pass in similar parameters that I did before. So website metric source, and then I have my web space name and my website name. And then below that I have, let's see what else we have. So operator. Operator, again, is going to be the same things that we have in other scenarios, greater than, less than. We have threshold. Threshold, again, what is the line that I want to draw above which I'm going to scale.
So, as a reminder, this is where you want to make sure you know what units it's working in, right?
Exactly. And then we have statistic. So statistic is how are we going to combine metrics from different data sources. So for most scenarios, you're just going to want to do an average. If I have, say, 10 different VMs running, the CPU for some may be higher than others. So I may want, say, to scale based on the maximum CPU of all the VMs that I have. So that would be a scenario where I would do metric statistic type max. But for most people, they just want, what is the average CPU across all of my virtual machines? If my average is high, that means I need to scale up. The danger of scaling to something like max or min is I may have a VM that has a bug on it or some sort of outlier. So if I scale up every time that I have one machine that's going to be high, it may not do exactly what I want. But, you know, via API, we allow you to do all these scenarios.
So max might be something more along, that might be something you use more for like an alert, like, hey, let me know if one of my VMs is going up, as opposed to scale up, because that might be an issue.
Exactly. And then we have time grain. So that's just time span from, and this is the same time grain that we had before. So it's like I may have 5 minute time granularity. Time aggregation, this is how we combine the different data series in a line. So again, here you're probably going to do average. If you want, say, if you have a metric that sums up over amount of time, you could do total instead of average. Stuff like CPU, those are all going to be averages over the time window. Like, what does total CPU mean across time? That doesn't make a lot of sense. But if it was number of requests, you could do a total over the time window for that. And then time window, that's the period of time that I'm looking over. So that could just be and from minutes, and I could say over the past 30 minutes. Now, something to be careful with for time window is for some services, so websites aren't like this, but for virtual machines, for example, it takes some time for data to be reported back from the machine. So you'll often see that the line in the portal doesn't exactly map up with what I have right now. So you can see there's this gap between now and when the last metric was reported. That's because it takes time for the agent to collect it, to push it, to aggregate, all that stuff. But the problem is, if I say my time window is 20 minutes, well, let's say if I said my time was 15 minutes, I would get this 15 minutes right here, and I actually wouldn't get any data back. So your time window needs to be big enough that it actually picks up some data points. So that's why, by default, we actually set the time window to 45 minutes. So we actually kind of aggregate data across much of this time window. You can put it shorter. You could say, I have a time window that's only 30 minutes, and then we get this. 20 minutes, you get this. So once you get much below 20 minutes, you're going to start having scenarios where no data has been reported in the past 20 minutes, and it's, things will start not working. So that applies specifically to cloud services and VMs. For websites, those guys report back data every minute, so it's just great. But it's a little slower here. And that's all that the metric trigger has. And then you have your scale action, which is the other interesting component. Scale action equals new scale action, of course. And then inside here we have four different values. So it's the type of action. Type of action is going to be either increase or no. Type of action is going to be change count always. In the future, you can see some other things that we may support. So you could change by percentage maybe. So if I have 10 VMs, I don't want to scale up by 2. I want to scale up by 20%. Because when I get to 50 VMs, I want to scale up by more than if I'm at 10. We actually don't support that today. So you can only put change count. So we'll just change by a fixed amount. And then for type, you have or that was type. Direction, you have which way you want to go. So it's either increase or decrease. So in this case, you want to scale up. Then you have the value. So this is how much you want to scale up by. So in this case, say I want to scale up by 2. Notice this is a string, not an int. And that's just because in the future, when you have a different scale types, we may take different parameters there. And then cooldown, that's the time range the time range that I'm going to wait after the scale action is taken before I take another scale action. So time span dot from minutes, 20 minutes. And we default that to 20 minutes. But if you want to take scale actions more frequently or less frequently, you can choose to do that at your leisure.
Great.
So that's building the autoscale rule. You can imagine you can do this for any number of rules, because inside a given time window, I might want to scale up and down, right? It's not like I'm going to only scale up. This entire thing I've built is just scaling up.
Sure.
Right? I'm actually going to want to take this whole thing. I don't know why it isn't adjusting my parentheses properly, but I think it's right here. Yeah, so then I would do another one that's like scale direction.
Back down.
Decrease, yeah. And if you have multiple metrics that you want to scale by, say you want to generally scale by CPU percentage, but you have another metric that indicates something's really wrong, like if you ever have more than 10,000 requests in an hour, you also want to scale up, even if your CPU is kind of middling, you could also add another metric trigger here for that request.
Okay.
So you can have any number. The caveat for this is the same as with profiles. On the scale tab, we'll only show you rules that you create for, in this case, CPU. So if you do create a rule about requests, we actually won't show that rule here.
Gotcha.
So you won't see anything about the request rule that you set up. You can list your rules, and then I think we're probably running out of time, so I won't actually show all this working, but once you hit run, it'll update the setting on the server, and then you'll be able to see it reflected on this page here.
Well, everything else you showed works, so I believe you that that's going to work.
Cool.
Great. Well, this has been awesome stuff. I'm really happy you could come on and show it, so thank you. Steven, do you have a Twitter handle for the people to check out?
Yeah, it's ISCSUS.
All right, well, you can see it right there. Make sure you check out the Cloud Cover Show on Twitter, as well as follow us on Facebook. So again, thank you for coming on. Really appreciate you showing us this very cool stuff.
And great. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, everybody, for watching.
Cool.